talking about the military aid, the considerations around military aid. You're saying that there's considerations. I think you said, was that the third one you were
saying? No, these two are the two main ones that I think of.
Okay.
The question of Iran's military importance in the Gulf area was much less clear in the minds of some of us at that point than these other two considerations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Iran turned to people in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. They finally, supported the administration's position, basically. Now, one issue concerning military aid, I guess, came up before the Shah's visit in April 62. There was discussion in the NSC of a 5-year military assistance plan. But I guess it's tied to scaling, tied to U.S. military aid. The Shah's efforts to reform his army, to scale it down a bit, because they felt the army was too large. They wanted to find ways to tighten it up a bit, reduce spending a bit. Do you recall that plan, those discussions of the plan?
Yes, although not in specific detail. There were quite a number in the administration, and I was one of them, who felt that some of the military funding in Iran was being wasted because of the Shah's sense of power and prestige and such. And that you really did need to sort out some of the more basic human problems in the country at that time. This incidentally did not make me one of the Shah's great favorites. There was agreement finally in 62, was it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That for purposes of CENTO and for purposes of our relations with Iran, we should go a little more actively into the question of the Iranian military forces.
Mm-hmm.
Especially since we were supplying so much of what they were using.
Did the pressure, the interest in getting the scale down a bit come from State Department or from AID, or who was the main interest?
I guess, we kept this group going, and it was a process, I would say, gradually finding the Pentagon view less accepted by the others until, in the end, we were able to get a U.S. government decision on some restrictions.
Mm-hmm. When the Shah visited in April 62, was there much planning or discussions on that visit and what the U.S. position would be?
Well, one of the things about state visits is that it does crystallize the mind. Better than almost anything else, even better than a speech sometimes, which is the other great crystallizing factor in official policy. So that the briefing books for the president and for the secretary would really run down the whole list of things.
Did you meet with the Shah at that time? Or were you involved in the discussion?
Sure.
How would you characterize the Shah? What was your impression of him at that point? What recollections do you have?
He was riding fairly high. He had regained whatever assurance he'd lost in the 50s as a result of the Mossadegh thing. He was emerging into a kind of maturity, into being his own man, really. When I say maturity, I mean, on the one hand, he was already beginning to reduce his almost dependence on American advice in some fields. On the other hand, he was recognizing more clearly, I think, the consequences of his own actions. in a number of ways. So that when the visit came, the discussions were very serious and straightforward, and of course glamorous, because there were these two young couples that were brilliant in their appearances. And so from the general point of view, it was a spectacular visit, and from the substantive point of view, I thought at the time had achieved some better understanding of why I was, as Americans are saying, some of these things, why I was that the child was resisting me, or accepting me. Mm-hmm. He was talking more in those days of having himself developed a lot of these ideas of broadening the public process, and this was what lay behind the White Revolution, for example.
In terms of the substance of the discussions with the Shah, was the main subject on military and economic aid, or were there other matters discussed as well?
Oh, he loved to discuss global security and strategic concerns, mm-hmm. and so they also were very much on the agenda. And he also was glad to talk about what Iran was achieving, and as I recall, put on a very positive view of what was going on. And indeed many things were going on, but he had started, for example, he started about that time, traveling schools for the Kurds and other migrant groups, so that kids that moved from one place to another in different seasons could have schooling. He developed a number of rural industries, many of them agri-industries. The road net was improving strongly. Things were happening.
In terms of this five-year military aid plan, which I mentioned a few minutes ago, what was his response to that? Was he friendly to it, or was it that it raised problems? Was it a plan to scale down his army? Was it
exactly?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
One gets mixed up as to reactions at a particular moment and then reactions
at another time.
I can't remember with what grace he accepted that something along these lines would be necessary if he were going to continue to participate.
But he accepted it in general terms of the end, though, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When you met with the Shah, was it with Rusk and other officials, or did you do it on a one-to-one basis at some point, or?
Not during that visit,
no.
When I was touring the area, I would call on him, and usually with the American ambassador, so that the two of us, and he might be alone, would discuss the arrangements for everybody. But in Washington, he was there as head of state, and the principal on the American side was usually either the president or the secretary of state. My recollection is he also met with the Senatorial Committee, but I've known
certainly. One of the minutes of the meetings that I did see suggested that he wanted to have a joint session of Congress.
Oh.
Was that, in fact, apparently, even if from the minutes, even if no one was present, or if it was a very small attendance, he still wanted a joint session for reasons of prestige. Was that arranged by the State Department, or did they try to induce Congress to...
Did it happen?
I'm not quite sure. Maybe it didn't fall through.
He certainly met members.
Yeah.
But I don't remember just exactly the context.
Yeah. Okay.
That incidentally was a very common kind of request when a leader was coming.
Yeah.
And the Congress itself resisted having it happen very often.
Yeah, I can imagine. Did you have a hand in monitoring the five-year plan? Like you mentioned, did you take any role, like overseeing its implementation in general terms in following years, or was this more of a Pentagon concern, unless it was agreed upon?
Do you recall anything about
it? The details were Pentagon's responsibility, but the State Department was getting reports, and each year would look at the situation before going home for the next request to Congress.
Okay. You mentioned you could visit Iran at some point. Was there several visits you made, or just
yes?
These were part of just tours of the region, basically.
Yes, normally an assistant secretary will tour of the region maybe once a year, depends more often sometimes, not get to every country every year.
What were your impressions? What was your first visit to Iran? Do you recall? Was it 61 or 62?
61.
Okay. What were your impressions of the country at that point? That's the best, so you can recall anything specific about the visit or your impressions?
In a number of ways, it was ahead of South Asian countries like India. But there were many similarities, more similarities in my mind than the Iranians were prepared to accept. Iran thought of itself as being more advanced. And it was I think they did not like my even comparing Iran and India, although in the countryside it seemed to me that there were many, many similarities, and even in the cities. I felt that, unlike the situation in India, in which mass political involvement had been developed by Gandhi and Nehru and the others, and there was a real sense of participation, this did not exist in Iran. It seemed to me it did not exist in Iran as much as it did in Turkey, although much more than in Afghanistan. I suppose during that period I was somewhat skeptical of the claims that Iran was on the threshold of becoming a modern, semi-democratic state with a constitutional monarch. Although I was one of those who believed that was a good direction for it to pursue.
I guess it didn't have a colonial struggle, so that any of them through. Like I said, that's right. Probably the key factor. There was no popular movement against colonial presence that who did you meet? You met the Shah when you were in your visits, basically? Was there other high officials there? Or,
yes. Yeah. Well, normally, in such a visit, one would meet a variety of people. A number of members of the cabinet, some military people, the head of the central bank, some academic people, perhaps. There would be a dinner party at the embassy with a collection of people. Sometimes some political figures, depending on the current mood and so on. And I thought that that because of my prior Asian experience, I could get around and I could meet with different people and get some sense of their views.
In August 62, Ali Amini resigned as Prime Minister. I think the one reason stated was that he failed to get USAID to finance a budgetary deficit. But I imagine there might be more to that. Do you recall anything about his resignation or State Department actions for his resignation?
This was a disappointment.
Yeah.
We did not feel responsible for covering his deficit.
Mm-hmm.
And felt that there were a number of issues in which a country like Iran had to face up to its own problems and do something about them. I trouble influencing the Shah and making certain changes and certain reforms. And that if he'd seen a better chance of carrying through some of these reforms in the next year or two, he might want to resign. I think it's also possible Shah got tired of hearing him press such reforms.
Did this incident lead to sort of like maybe sort of a collapse of expectations that the Shah would turn into sort of a constitutional monarch? Was there some, you know, there were any hopes before they more or less put aside, or was it there still hopes in the long term that this would work out that way?
I think the skepticism began to grow. From then on, the Shah began building up to, I'm afraid that's cold. Began building up to the coronation. He had previously said he didn't want to have a coronation until the country was well on its way, you know, he'd achieved certain things. I can't remember the timing, yeah, but I think the skepticism was beginning to grow.
After Amini resigned, was there still efforts to encourage Ambassador Holmes to meet with the Shah and press for certain social changes or political changes? Was there still efforts to?
Yes,
this was before the Red Revolution. I think the Red Revolution was in January 63, I think.
Well, but the build-up had been the preceding 2 years,
that's true,
almost.
That's true.
And getting it developed, the plan set, and so on. So it was part of the picture during that period.
But you were saying about Holmes?
Holmes was getting anxious that we were pressing the Shah too hard on some of these modernization, or some of the economic changes, or opening up the system. And whereas there have not been overt indications recently, as I recall, of neutralism on the Shah's part, Holmes felt it was still a sensitive and fragile situation, and if pressed too hard, the Shah might indeed go in another direction. And there were a number who supported him on this, as I recall. I think this anxiety is very strong in Pentagon. We all shared it to some extent, although some of us felt that the Shah's options were not as broad as that, and that really the danger to him of not opening up the system remained greater than the danger of neutralism.
From the Shah, I guess in early 63, the Shah had made a major announcement about the White Revolution in terms of land reform program, education reform, and so forth. Was there, when he made this announcement, was there any prior consultation with Holmes or other officials in Washington? Was this a sort of surprise that he would announce this, you know, program of land reform, for example, and other social changes? This is sort of building up, as you suggested, but was there, did this seem to be a sort of turning point, in a sense?
I don't remember.
I don't know. Okay. Now, another development in 63 was, I guess in March, spring of 63, President Kennedy asked for a review of policy towards Iran under what's called NSAM 228. Which I guess led to the development of a major State Department paper on policy towards Iran. Could you tell me about this policy review? Is this ring any recollections?
Yes, it does. Only again, the details.
Yeah, right.
Pretty far back.
Yeah.
I think there may be some people still around who participated in the actual work on that paper.
Well, go ahead and talk to. had some of that. His records were also very vague also, so, yeah. I had the impression that the Budget Bureau might have had some role in initiating it. A person named Kenneth Hauser, an official there. Do you recall anything?
Hansen,
that's right. Kenneth Hansen. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yes. He came into it rather curiously from the point of view of some of the others. He had lived out there. He had some pretty strong views, as I recall, which he was pushing. And these views didn't necessarily accord with those that I would describe as the consensus. Is that paper available?
Yeah, the impression I have from the document that I've seen, is that he was trying to push for a more aggressive stance towards internal development programs. He thought it wasn't a comprehensive development program he wanted the Shah to adopt. And he was saying that Holmes wasn't pressing the Shah hard enough.
Yes,
that's one.
Yeah.
That's sort of the gist of his position, I think.
But I mean, is the NSAM, is the final paper of it?
Yeah, the response to it is available. Parts are sanitized, but...
Okay. Yeah. But my recollection is that we went through this, did not accept the Hansen position.
Yeah.
Felt that the degree of pushing that we were doing, you know, really couldn't be changed very much without some results that we were either unsure of or didn't like. And so it was, as so often happens with government papers, a justification of the line we were on with not much change.
So it's sort of continuity of basic policy.
Yeah,
because one of the documents I did see was a standing group meeting in which Harriman was there with George Bundy, which suggested there was a consensus in favor of intervention, but the question was how much intervention was possible. And you suggested that if you go too far, you might precipitate basic problems in U.S.-Iran relations, and it would be in a certain situation if we press the Shah too hard. But there was a consensus that some intervention was necessary, though, apparently. But wasn't clear how much intervention would be taken or along what lines. But they did use the term intervention, and that was the sort of parameters of the...
There were groups that by then had developed an interest. I suspect that Bobby Kennedy was interested in pushing the Shah harder by then. But Hansen did represent some people on the... I mean, his views represented the views of some people on the Hill. Some people, you might recall, the fringes of the policy management group, but that we kept moving in an effort to push aside to a degree, but not. The kind of pressure that would raise some of these questions of nutrients and more.
Right.
Or a reaction by the Iranian military against us and so on.
For example, the State paper suggested that it would be possible to use some influence to ensure that the land tenure was worked out in a way in which we had a rational land tenure system, for example, to find some ways to ensure the land reform operated in an efficient way. Was that something that was discussed with the Holmes and the Shah? How the courts would work out in practice? Do you recall anything of that? It's just hard, I asked him that one paper, so it's hard to say how it was implemented or not.
Certainly, Holmes was party to all these discussions.
Yeah, yeah.
But as I suggested, he was not inclined to push terribly hard on this.
Yeah.
We got assurances that attention would be paid to these issues. I can't argue that the assurances were satisfactorily kept in all cases.
It was very just a difficult question.
It really is. And of course, many things are more complicated than they seemed at that time to people in Washington.
I guess it was the minutes that I saw the Standing Group meeting that suggested that it would be useful to have a greater world bank role in Iran. Because would advice from a multilateral institution would be more acceptable than advice from a great power like the United States. Was there efforts to induce the World Bank to take a greater role in foreign aid efforts there? Is that something you worked on? Or?
Yes. And indeed, the World Bank in those days was developing its interest in systems and how effective the systems were being carried out. And we did think it true that it was easier to get multinational, multilateral pressure on a country like Iran or Pakistan or whatever than to do it all ourselves.
Was the World Bank responsive to those suggestions that they take a greater part?
They thought they were already doing it, indeed to the extent they were. So they were responsive to the need, and said, yes, they were involved in it.
Another development in 1953 was that the Ayatollah Khomeini began a campaign against the Shah and U.S. influence in Iran, which led to an uprising in summer of 1963 that the Shah suppressed, apparently, with force. At this time, did U.S. officials take any special note of Khomeini? Were they aware of his developing influence, I guess, in the population?
They were very much aware that he could stir things up, cause troubles from his base in Iraq at that time, as I recall. I can recall very little, if any, sympathy for him, because he did seem to be pushing the obscurantist view. And the Shah was convinced that the clergy in Iran was a negative influence in terms of all these ideas of modernizing the system. But that it was so far out of date that it could be managed. I think much later on, the Shah made the basic mistake when he cut off the state allowances to the mullahs, because that kind of mobilized them to support actions against him. But at this early stage, that hadn't come up. It was a time when there were a variety of vociferous tendencies, as the Indian Bill used to call them. The Kurds were in some turmoil too, and there were questions as to what the Arabs in the southern province of Iran, which is Alba, were, what influences they were under. So my recollection is we saw that as part of the general insecurity of the country. But not as the one that would succeed when others fail.
There was this uprising that took place in 1963 in major cities, apparently. Was there any special, I guess, U.S. support for the Shah at this period, moral support or otherwise, to bolster his position against his opponents? Do you want to think about the U.S. response at that time?
I don't remember anything special that made me, but I just don't remember.
Yeah.
We were getting reports on the Shah's decisions and actions to control it, and I would think we encouraged him to control it soon, didn't we?
In general, you mentioned
that this was an example of how he needed to broaden his basic support to avoid that.
And you mentioned earlier that there's sort of an emerging concern about human rights problems in Iran. How much concern was there about the Shah's treatment of his domestic opponents? And was there efforts to get him to loosen up a bit? Or was
there was concern and a feeling that Savak was giving his head rather more than was advisable or wise. The Shah was antagonizing elements in the society, we would have said unnecessarily, about what he was doing, and that he needed, again, to broaden the base so he could avoid feeling the need for this.
Was this something that Holmes, Pastor Holmes, or you ever brought up in your discussions with the Shah? This question, it was a very touchy question to bring up at the head of state, but was it ever approached in some kind of indirect way or direct way? Did you recall?
It certainly was brought up. Now, how directly or indirectly, I don't remember, because as you say, yeah. Yes, of course it's delicate. On the other hand, there were people in Washington who felt very strongly about it, and it was important for the Shah to know how people in Washington felt. Now, if you asked me to guess how it was done, my guess would be that speeches in Congress were given to the Shah, so he could read from this kind of thing.
Was the concern of the Congress at the time also?
Concern of the Congress, but also, as I said, some elements of the administration.
The question of anti-Shah activities among Iranian students in the United States never come to your attention. Was this ever an issue in U.S.-Iran relations? Mm-hmm. Question of the dissidents in this country that were studying, at American schools?
Indeed it was. Yes. I remember a telephone call from Iran, who was foreign minister at one point, saying he was caught in the Waldorf Astoria Hotel in New York and couldn't get out because there were demonstrators outside. What could I do about it? We were very much aware of two things. One, we had a lot of Iranian students in this country. Some of them governmental students, some of them private students, but all around. Two, that there was a lot of anti-Shah sentiment among them. Three, that through the so-called education minister at the Iranian embassy, the Iranian government was making strong efforts to control them. So it was a difficult situation.
One official told me that there was a meeting between Robert Kennedy and some of the student dissidents that took place in 1963. Do you recall anything about that?
I remember that they called on him, that he received them. We had thought that it was unwise for him to receive them personally. He did it anyway. He listened to their complaints. He gave them some assurances that the U.S. legal and judicial processes would be followed out in this country. In other words, we would not permit outsiders to come in and by having put our laws and dealing with individuals. He was somewhat careful, though, in what he said to them, actually. It was a symbolism of his receiving them that caused anxieties.
Did this get back to the Shah, or were there complaints about this?
Yes, I had the Iranian embassy ambassador in my office immediately complaining about it.
How would you respond to that kind of situation?
By pointing out that the ambassador knows American life, and the platinum members a certain freedom of action. Sorry if you felt that the U.S. government was encouraging these people by this, whereas in fact, as the Attorney General had said, we were following American laws exactly on this. And we would be as happy as he if the Iranian students could have more enthusiasm for their government.
I'm sure they're not too pleased with that response. All in all, looking back at the Kennedy administration, how would you characterize the state of U.S.-Iran relations during this period? It seems like there were some troubled moments, as you're suggesting. Was it?
Yeah. Oh, I'd say that the Kennedy administration was hopeful of an improved relationship, of improved conditions within Iran, that it regarded the Iranian relationship as important, regarded the Shah with both appreciation and skepticism, and therefore that supported the Shah on major activities, it sought to draw the Shah in to policy discussions more widely than just Iran, and pressed the Shah, if that's the verb, to do a better job at home. The Kennedy administration wanted to see the central area, the northern tier countries, increase in prosperity and justice. Modernization. So it was, if you will, a middle course between cutting off the Shah because we don't like to deal with dictators on the one side, and on the other side embracing the Shah as happened in the 1970s.
Well, after Lyndon Johnson became president, late 1963, was there any noteworthy shift? A modification of policy towards the Shah, or did it continue pretty much on the same basis under Johnson?
My impression is it continued pretty much on the same basis. Iran was, my impression is that Iran was not at the top of his agenda, I remember that, but he had less of the, if you will, missionary zeal to try to see conditions corrected in other countries. My recollection is that by then we didn't find issues in Iran quite as compelling for us in relation to other issues in the area. This bureau, as I mentioned, was handling also the Arab-Israel problems. Also Greek, Turkey, Cyprus, and in 64 we had a major Cyprus crisis. Also Iran and Afghanistan, Pakistan and Afghanistan, at a time when Pakistan closed the Afghan border and forced it into doing all this trade with the Soviet Union, except for the little bit that went to Iran. And of course India-Pakistan, 1965 war on top. So there were a good many other things happening in that part of the world that, as I recall, meant that somewhat less energy went into the question of our relationships with the Shah.
Some sort of relaxation of interest in pressing for reforms, or to some extent?
Some relaxation of pressing for reforms, yes.
On the one issue that came up in 1954 was the updating of the military agreement that under which the government of Iran would exempt U.S. military personnel from prosecution under local law. This issue, do you recall that you discussed or dealt with when you were Assistant Secretary of the State Department?
This was an issue which is coming up then with respect to several countries as part of the nationalist upsurge. And it arose in people, as I recall, Pakistan, maybe Thailand, some other countries as well. And it was an awkward issue for the U.S. because on the one hand, we have traditionally not required extraterritoriality. And on the other hand, to have American soldiers on duty there subject to local jurisprudence could raise some very difficult questions. Because soldiers do get drunk and they have accidents in their cars and they make women pregnant and all this kind of thing. And so we were trying to resist that pressure if we could. You may know how it came out. My recollection is that we saved most of it, perhaps giving Iran some jurisdiction over certain types of cases or something.
That was true.